This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Welcome to the English Football Show right here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and around the world. I'm Christopher Chrysostom, and alongside me today we have Mitch Keating and Tim Spiliotis. Braden, unfortunately, is sick this week, so he's pulled a sickie.
Yeah, but he'll have a match in hand soon, show in hand.
Well, that means that you two boys can actually pull some points off him in the fight for our quiz because, well, Braden's leading on 19 points. Tim, you're equal on 19 points. And Mitch, you're only 1 point behind.
Oh, could grab three, I hope. Could grab three against Tim, but tough competition.
It's like the League One relegation battle.
Well, there's 13 teams in that battle, which we'll talk about later on. But, boys, what do we have on the show today?
Yeah, so we'll start off with talking about the FA Cup. Some interesting matches that took place over the weekend. Some big eliminations as well with Manchester United. We'll discuss that. And we'll also, given the international break now, we'll talk about some of our major talking points in English football and the Premier League.
And obviously over to the EFL, in the Championship, obviously a big fixture between Leeds, Blades, we'll touch on that, and the rest of the playoffs with the remaining probably 10 sides in the hunt. Drop down to League One, close fight, obviously after this morning's game between Mansfield and Lincoln's draw. It's making that run for the third automatic promotion spot very tight. Also relegation, like we mentioned just before, 12, 13 sides all could drop down. And as well as Wimbledon making a late run, you'd say, to get out of that relegation zone. And as well as League Two, similar talking points, especially with Paul Scholes leaving the helm of Oldham after just 31 days.
And of course, you can get involved with the show by calling us on 99999. Or tweeting us at EF_show or at FNR_radio. What I do want to know from our followers and also from you boys as well, a lot of our fans, they have a Premier League side and then plus a team in the lower divisions that they support. I saw on Twitter last night one of our fans has a Manchester United team and also Luton. Now, what happens, and Braden as well, when he's here, he follows United and Southend, what happens when that lower division side gets into the Premier League? Do they continue following that side or do they go and support another lower league team?
I'd like to think that you jump on the lower league side that's come up, especially in the Premier League. It's always exciting for a new club, and especially if it's a small club. If we do see Southend in the Premier League in the next, hopefully, decade or so, that would be interesting for Braden, but I'd like to think he'd be a Shrimpers man. It'd be very exciting, obviously, to have one of those small clubs. I have a soft spot for Brentford. And I'd love to see Griffin Park being played in the Premier League at some point in the next couple of years. I tipped them to almost get it through this year. They're just off the touch this year, but they're a young side, and I think they certainly could be up with your Manchester United, City's, Liverpool's in the next future, and I think that'd be exciting.
Well, my good friend goes for Chelsea, and his lower league side was Crystal Palace, who are now in the Premier League. So it's an interesting situation.
So does he still support Crystal Palace?
He has a soft spot, but I'm not sure if he still supports them, but it'd be good to interview him one day.
Well, I'm right on the Preston North End bandwagon, so and in their form right now, they could be in the Premier League shortly. But, of course, that's what we want to know from you, the fans. If you support one of those lower league sides and a Premier League side, tweet us. Will you continue following that lower league side if they do make it into the Premier League one day? Let's begin now with the FA Cup results. The big game was Manchester United's being knocked out by Wolves, which a lot of people were surprised about, but with Wolves' form against the best sides in the Premier League, I don't know why anyone's surprised. They knocked out Liverpool in the FA Cup, plus they've taken points off Chelsea, Manchester United and Manchester City.
Yeah, exactly right. They've been one of those sides that have come up this season, and we knew that they were going to be firing early with the money that's gone into the club and how well they performed in the Championship last year. And you're right, they have really stuck it to some of the bigger clubs in the Premier League that, you know, we do see pushing late into these domestic cup fixtures. And yeah, I think they've been fantastic. Certainly, you'd call them the dark horse from probably a couple of rounds ago, and they've held on to that title, I guess, knocking off, like you said, the Reds and also United on the weekend. And I with obviously City on the other side of the cup tie and the cup draw, you think they are the two best teams going in. And I think that Wolves stand every chance to potentially knock off City and win the FA Cup in their year back in the Premier League.
Well, there certainly is a lot of belief. And in the Premier League as well, Wolves are the best team outside the Big Six. So they're seventh at the moment. And considering all the money that's involved with Tottenham, Man City, et cetera, they've done pretty well this season.
Raul Jimenez is on fire for them. He cost them $30 million, which is a bargain in the form that he's currently in. If he continues on with that, he's bound to go to a bigger club. And Wolves as well. They're also the other teams that progress through to the next round. Manchester City's win, which we'll touch on shortly because of VAR. Watford's victory as well. That's a great performance or great result for them because they did rest their players against Manchester City in the Premier League to focus on the FA Cup. And Brighton's penalty victory over Millwall.
Yeah, well, we talked about, obviously, some of the clubs are still in the FA Cup. And they're in the mid-table like Watford are, not having to really take a gamble with resting players when you are sitting, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th, you're not in the relegation hunt and you're not in, you know, a run for the Premiership. So I think it was a great call. And it's, yeah, obviously paid dividends with the victory. And then they'll obviously move on to the next round. And, yeah, as for Brighton, sorry.
I was just going to say, with how they did play a weekend side against Manchester City, do you think they would have done that if they played a mid-table side? Because Manchester City, even if they played their full-strength lineup, they probably wouldn't have taken any points off City. But if they were playing a Crystal Palace in the Premier League or a Brighton, any of those mid-table sides, do you still think they would have rested those players?
I think it wouldn't have been as many. I think they would have had a stronger outfit, probably not the strongest that they could have put together. But if they were playing a West Ham, Leicester, Wolves, for example, I think that they still would have obviously pushed a lot harder for 90, maybe different substitutions. But yeah, I would have liked to think the grassier side, if they were playing a mid-table side, as mentioned, I think they would have put in probably a stronger fight if in that instance.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously touching back onto Brighton Millwall, great game, fantastic. Unfortunately for Millwall fans, they did think they were through quite early into the taking that 2-0 lead, and the free kick, obviously, I don't want to say it was a hard one to read because I think it's one of the more savable goals, but disappointing, obviously, in the end. Obviously, Cooper's penalty as well, but what we'd love to see was some Matt Ryan heroics with the save during that penalty shootout and Brighton through to the next round. Obviously, they'll play City, which is the tough draw, but an underdog story that always appears in the FA Cup, whether that's a Wolves, whether that's a Brighton. It was certainly a Millwall up until the last round, so we'll see who can take over from there.
It'll be interesting to see if Manchester City do fall in this semi, because it'll be between either Brighton against either Wolves or Watford. Mm. So that would be probably one of the most entertaining FA Cups in recent history.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Manchester City. But before that, Solomon March scored the equalising goal for Brighton, so you could say they're marching on into the semi-finals. But let's move on to the Manchester City game, which yet again was highlighted by the lack of VAR in a tournament where some games have VAR and other games don't.
Yeah, I think we mentioned this probably close to a month ago, and I think it was two rounds ago, and we just there's just no balance. It's hard to argue. Where's the equality when you have really got one ground is using VAR, and while you can just go across or just north up the country, and you've got another side that can't use it and needs it. So look, props to Manchester City. Was a fantastic comeback, and it was a great game. But obviously, it is now marred by the fact that the ground couldn't use VAR for certain decisions. Swansea will be disappointed. Manchester City, obviously, they'll not look to focus on it, and now we'll have VAR for the rest of the tournament. But it is quite annoying to not have that. It's such a big competition as well. To have one ground without it, and another with.
It baffles me because this isn't backyard cricket. You don't make your own rules for certain games. It's a competition where every team should be on an even playing field. That's why we love the FA Cup, because lower tier or non-league teams can challenge the best teams in the competition.
That is the problem, though, with VAR, is you aren't going to have that type of technology for those non-league sides. And to a certain point, we're going to get to probably the third, fourth round, and you're going to realise that we are bringing in Premier League sides, and VAR is being implemented all across world football at the moment. Yeah. So at what point do you bring in VAR? Is there a round that it has to come into? But then you can't rely on non-league sides not being in there until the very last game.
Then
so,
don't have it.
Exactly.
We
right.
haven't had it for, 150 years, and now it's required that we need to have VAR. We don't need VAR in the FA Cup.
It would be interesting to compare if they kept VAR outside of the FA Cup and obviously the League Cup as well, perhaps. And then obviously you still compare it with the Premier League. I think it will be implemented in the Premier League probably as early as next season.
I think it is already going to be implemented next season.
But yeah, it would be an interesting to compare, you know, when one competition isn't having VAR and how well that's going to work over the first 5 years of potentially VAR in the Premiership.
Tim, with the Sydney FC playing at all these different venues this season, is VAR implemented at all those venues?
It is, yes.
And some of those venues hold, what, 10,000?
No, 20,000. But they're not as advanced as the bigger stadiums, but they still manage to VAR. Cater for it. All you need is
Den's a pretty big stadium, a modern stadium, and they can't have VAR.
All you need is just the TV broadcast and some little space for the VAR referees, and then you've got it.
I think that's the one issue is the broadcasting with, obviously, non-league as well. You have the clubs can film, and there is certain broadcasting for certain league teams. And it was fantastic to see, like we said this morning, Bean and also those of the view KO could watch Mansfield versus Lincoln. But, yeah, I think that, obviously, it's a difficult one, and I think that it was probably rushed to have VAR in at certain games, and I think they probably should have just probably left it out and don't have to rush into something like this, especially with something that hasn't really been tested. Obviously, we do say it's going to be in the Premier League next season, but, yeah, I would like to see it potentially just left out of the domestic cups if we can't have every single game using VAR.
Swansea were in the Premier League last season, modern venue. It's pretty simple. Implement VAR at a ground. It's easy to do that. Let's move on now to our talking points in the Premier League. With the international break this week and there's no games on in the Premier League or in the Championship. So let's just have a little time to talk about some of the big issues or big talking points in the Premier League.
Well, I'll start with mine. And one thing I want to bring up is, obviously, it happens every year. Managers are sacked for performances and some come in and do fantastic jobs and some just struggle with you know, the job that they're given. And obviously lately there was Claudio Ranieri's moved out of Fulham, and we've seen Ole Gunnar Solskjaer come to more fame and been as one of the great starters. And so there are five managers I do want to talk to. One's Scott Parker, Jan Sarwat, Brendan Rodgers, more recent as well, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and Ralf Hasenhüttl at Southampton. Now, each manager I think each manager's actually done fairly well from what they've been given. I'll start with Scott Parker. He's just an interim after taking over from Ranieri, but he's probably had the hardest out of, I think, all the managers to deal with. He's quite late into the season to come into the job. And I think that, look, for obviously a first managerial spot as well for Parker, I think he hasn't really got any, not backing, but there's not a lot of faith, I'd say, behind him.
It's similar to Darren Moore's selection last season when West Brom were bound for relegation after sacking two managers in the same season. There's unlikely that he will help Fulham avoid relegation, so they're bound to fall back into the Championship. So now he's just got to work out which players are staying, which players will be leaving. If he gets a few results at the end of the season and maybe shows that they can get automatic promotion next year, then I reckon he has an opportunity to keep that job.
Yeah, exactly right. I think the Darren Moore comparison is fantastic. I think Moore only had the six games and almost actually kept West Brom up. I don't see the same thing happening with Fulham. I think him and Fulham and Huddersfield are both looking or doomed for the Championship next season. But, it would be interesting to see just how he goes. And you never know, a little role like this could certainly ignite a managerial career elsewhere and perhaps in another Championship side. But for now, yeah, I think that Fulham just battling, and it was just obviously pulled the trigger on Ranieri and Parker. I wouldn't say he hasn't got anything to lose because obviously they are still in the fight, but it's just interesting decision, I think, and timing. Next one was Jan Sievert, came over obviously from Germany and the Bundesliga and with Dortmund.
Dortmund's reserve coach.
Yeah, but the Huddersfield job, I think obviously Wagner was a fantastic coach, but they're a side that, to date, have only scored 7 goals at home in 16 games. Not probably a Premiership side of what we've seen. I think that, obviously, we talk about Huddersfield a fair bit, obviously, with Aaron Moy and the great run that they had in the Championship not too long ago. But for a manager, I think he just hasn't had an impact. I don't think I've seen a major difference. And I don't wonder what your takes on the new manager at Huddersfield.
Well, I think that early on they knew that they weren't going to avoid relegation, so they'll drop him back down to the Championship, which means that they've been planning for that return to the Championship, which is ideal because it means that they can maybe push back into the Premier League the following season. So a lot of the players that they got now, I don't see them going to another Premier League side. Maybe Aaron Moy is the one that should be at another Premier League team next season. But the rest of that team, if they can hold on to him, which I think they will be able to, they can gain that automatic promotion. And that's why they brought Seward in. His record's not the best at the moment. I think he's only won one of his 8 games in charge. 36-year-old manager as well, which I want to know from you guys, if a 36-year-old German manager, if he was English, would he have the same opportunity as, say, a 36-year-old German manager?
Well, obviously, we know that there are a lot of managers from the Bundesliga who do start quite early, and a lot earlier. And in English clubs, they do like to rely on the old managers who have, I wouldn't say recycled through, but do have a lot of experience in the Premier League, Championship. Probably, potentially not. I think it's obviously something that's a lot different to English managers, that difference between the Bundesliga and the Premier League. But I think it's fantastic that we do still see managers such at quite a young age. You do talk about, Steve Gerrard, Frank Lampard, all these, this next era and generation of players starting to turn into managers. And I think that's very exciting, but they're not probably at the top tier just yet. Obviously, Gerrard at Rangers was a fantastic get, and he's done just enough, probably not the title for them in that Scottish league, but it is exciting to see these young managers get a go early.
And Eddie Howe is another name that comes to mind when it comes to English managers. So I sort of think that if he was English, he would get a look in, but obviously they picked the German.
Let's move on to the other teams that have had new managers. Brendan Rodgers, I think that's a quick one that we can talk about. He's only had 3 games in charge at Leicester City. I said early on when they were looking for a new manager that he's the ideal man for Leicester. He's a kind of the manager that will rely on the young players, play attacking football, which Leicester City want to play. The only thing I wasn't happy with was the way he departed Celtic, such a big historic club with a rich history and on course to win another treble, and he departed with 10 games to go. It's caused friction with the fan base. He could have ended as a legend with the way that they've won everything in the Scottish League in the past 3 seasons with him in charge. If he just held on for another 10 games, they would have allowed him to leave, and there wouldn't have been this issue.
Do you think the Foxes probably could have pushed for an interim manager if they knew that Rodgers
was
coming
really
at the end of the
season?
They
really wanted Brendan Rodgers, and he could have told him, I'll join next season, but I don't want to join mid-season.
Do you think, as a Celtic fan, you'd want to hear that? Obviously, he's done a lot for them. But obviously, yeah, it's more positive outing for him and probably a good send-off if they do win the title. But, I think that it was probably a smarter move. But I think he was very excited by the job and the opportunity and obviously moved over to
I think Celtic fans realise that the Scottish League isn't the best league in the world, and that the opportunity to move to a mid-table Premier League side is better than staying in that league. But if he showed any respect to that club and stayed there for the remainder of the season, they wouldn't have had any issue with it.
So great. We'll move on. Obviously, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Manchester United, fantastic start. Record-breaking start in a lot of competitions as well, not just the Premier League. But, it's straight turnaround from, obviously, Jose Mourinho. You can talk about the position in the table where they are at now. Obviously, they were stuck in 6th, and they're starting to flirt with 4th, 5th, 6th now. So they're still in the same hunt, but obviously, a lot more or stronger favourites for a Champions League spot than when Ole took over.
And he's probably the best out of the whole list that you've read out. He's a former player as well, so maybe he's connected with the current squad.
That's what he's done. He's united the fans, the squad, and everyone at the club. That's what he's been able to achieve at United, and he's probably now the favourite for the job at United despite 2 defeats in a row. And the last one,
Ralph Hasenhüttl.
Ralph.
At Southampton, I thought he had a fantastic start, and straight away had that energy that Jurgen Klopp brings on the sideline. I thought that was fantastic, but he's done very little to avoid relegation, still just 2 spots outside of that bottom 3, I believe. And at the moment, Southampton, they haven't looked the strongest outfit. Of late, though, I think they've been fantastic. The return of Ward-Prowse and even Valerie, both those players stepping up on the score sheet has been fantastic for them. But I think that as a manager, he probably just hasn't had that ignition and hasn't been that catalyst that they've needed to just boost themselves outside. Just like I would have liked to see them follow probably where Newcastle have led to at the moment, pushing close to the mid-table. But a lot of time left, and I don't think Southampton are going to be one of the 3 teams outside of the Premiership next year.
Yeah, let's move on to the second major talking point, Tim.
Yeah, so mine is the new era at Arsenal. So they've come into the season with a completely different manager. We've had Arsene Wenger for the past 20-plus years. So he's walked into some big shoes. So I'm just interested.
He's walked into a big coat. That big jacket that Arsene Wenger used to wear.
Yeah. I'm interested to know what you guys think about Arsenal and how they've gone under the new manager this season.
I think with the team and obviously the playing list in the club itself, it's a hard one to just manoeuvre your way into, especially after so long under Arsene Wenger. And I think that Aubameyang's done a fantastic job. They're still pushing for Champions League, which is fantastic. You know, I don't think they're going to be another one of these sides that are floating in that fifth, sixth. I think they're certainly up with Tottenham at the moment, who are a side who have probably just been better than Arsenal the last couple of seasons. But, I think he's done a fantastic job with the list he's got. Unfortunately, we're hearing that, you know, at the end of the season, they're not going to have a lot of money to invest in players. And we already know that Ramsey's out the door, Mesut Ozil potentially the same, and some of these younger players are going to have to step up. And with injuries this season, we have seen some exciting players and a bit of a shine into Arsenal's future. But at the same time, I think with Emery, what he can do and the connections he would have, he needs a bit more money to get this side and staying into that top four or five for next year.
Yeah, I think without the money and investment, that they'll be between fourth and sixth during Emery's era at the club. That he just needs some support from the owner, and I can't see that happening anytime soon.
But he has done a good job. They're on track to beat last season's total, and they are 12 more points ahead at this stage of the season than last season.
Yeah, definitely.
And some of the wins as well this season against the top four, and even the comeback against Rennes as well. They're playing really well.
That's right. And let's move on to the last talking point, and that is are Wolves the best ever newly promoted side into the Premier League?
They certainly have an argument.
This is Premier League era only. We're not talking about Nottingham Forest in the 70s when they got up and won successive titles. We're talking about the Premier League era.
From the Premier League era, I think that, look, they've been fantastic. We thought they were certainly going to push and breathe down the necks of the top six. Obviously, there's a fair gap between them and Chelsea at the moment. But, I think they've done fantastically well. You can obviously talk about some of those early Premier League era sides. One comes to mind is 93-94 Newcastle. Peter Beardsley returned and joined with a young Andy Cole, mind you, and I think they scored 55 goals. Andy Cole had 34 of them, which was
34 in 40 games.
Well, there you go. Fantastic year for them, and 77 points and a third place finish, which is, you know, fantastic for their return, which was, I think, one of the better promotion sides. Obviously, Wolves a touch off that base, but certainly I think have that argument to be known as one of the better promoted sides in recent time.
Newcastle were good, but it's important to note that Wolves are doing well in an era where money is very big. So you've got the big six teams here: Liverpool, Man City, Tottenham, Arsenal, Man United, Chelsea. So they've got a lot more money than Wolves, but Wolves somehow, they've come from the Championship last season and they're seventh, the best out of the rest.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's the ideal part of the Wolves plus the FA Cup run. But again, even if the Blackburn side that got promoted into the first season of the Premier League, they finished fourth that year. Nottingham Forest in 94-95, they finished third. But I guess it was a bit easier back then with a small amount of money that you could actually make that push up into the Premier League from the Championship, which we don't really see anymore.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie!
Tim, we've pushed up Aussie Watch this week.
I've got the promotion, so thanks, guys.
That's all right.
So we'll start off. We're going to discuss how these Aussies have gone in terms of their season, how their clubs have fared, and what's left for them in this season. So we'll start with Matty Ryan. Brighton, I think they've survived relegation. I don't think they'll get relegated, but they're 15th currently, and they're on the road for a cup run, so they face Man City very soon.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic for them coming up in the last couple of years and seeing where they are at the moment, especially Matty Ryan. I think he's faced the most penalties or equal most penalties in the league, and I think that is where, unfortunately, they're conceding a lot of goals, Brighton. So that's just one thing they do have to stamp out of their game. But I think he's had a fantastic year for them, and it has turned into one of their best players. But, an FA Cup run could be a dream run for him, and we did see Azion on the weekend against Millwall did step up in the big time.
I recall his first game for the Mariners against Sydney FC, and he made a bad error, but it's just amazing to see him doing so well in the Premier League. Now on to Aaron Moy. Huddersfield, what can you say? Relegation bound. Yeah. Not been a great season for them this season.
If he continues to perform as he has been for the past two seasons, he's bound to get another club in the Premier League next year.
I can see him moving to another club. On to the Championship, Mile Jedinak with Aston Villa. They are probably the best team out of all the Aussie involvement. They are currently sixth, so in the playoff race.
Yeah, Jedinak's not really getting any minutes there.
Playing at the moment, but yeah, on limited minutes, I guess you'd call. I know he got subbed on last week, but yeah, just not in that probably best 15 for Villa at the moment.
It looks set to probably depart at the end of the season as well. On to Bailey Wright at Bristol City. Bristol City also in the playoff race. Currently ninth position. So how do you guys see?
They just dropped out, haven't they? They've obviously always, they managed to get themselves into six after a great run of form to start the year, and they've just dropped off a bit, I think. Them, Borough and Derby have kind of all slid a bit. We talk about Preston and Villa obviously doing quite well, but there's obviously plenty of time as well. I'd like to see Bailey into that, into the playoffs, and potentially even a matchup against Miller, Jedinak and Aston Villa would be very exciting for Aussies.
Yeah. Jackson Irvine at Hull City. Playoff contention, but I don't think they will be involved.
Hard side to read, I think. Jared Bowen's obviously led them from the front, but they've done very little elsewhere around the ground. And for Jackson, he hasn't had a standout season like we did see him at Burton when he made that move over to Hull. But plenty of time for him, and I'd love to see him in the Championship next season again.
And the last one, Tim.
Last one. We'll talk about Kenny Dougal. Barnsley on track for promotion and in the title race to win the whole league as well.
Yeah, so hopefully for Dougal and Barnsley that they can get promotion back to the Championship. We're going to take a break now. We'll be back with the EFL and our roving reporter. Welcome back to the English Football Show right here on FNR Football Nation Radio. On to our roving reporter segment now. We have Lewis Carlish on the line, a Birmingham City fan living in Western Australia. If you guys were on our website earlier this week, or last week, you would have read his article about being a Birmingham fan in Australia. So, Lewis, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
It's great to have you on board. And let's talk about Birmingham. Birmingham's recent results. Defeat on the weekend, not great.
Yeah, in the last minute. It was actually the first time in two or three games actually played very well. But you know how football goes if you don't take your chances. You only need one, and unfortunately that's what happened to us in the weekend.
Yeah, you can also talk about where Blues sit in the ladder at the moment. Do you think that the second City derby game, obviously a lot of headlines, but do you think that was the one that probably hurt the most with your chances for the playoffs?
Absolutely, definitely. I think, first of all, losing in a big game like that, I think, really damaging for morale and for the progress of our team, I think was a massive hit. And with the incident of the man running on the pitch and doing all that nonsense, I think that also had a negative effect because, you know, we've tried so hard to get our reputation back. And I think with that, I think we're now seen in a dark light, which I think has definitely had an effect on the team, especially in the performance after it against Millwall and now against Preston on the weekend. I think it probably has put an end to our playoff challenge.
Well, we do want to speak about, obviously, your front third, Shea Adams and Lukas Djukovic, those two combining together to score, or combine for, I think, 40-plus goals in goals and assists. Mm-hmm. How have you seen, obviously, the transformation in your front third with those two this season?
Oh, it's actually been amazing. It's the first time in quite a long time that we've had not just one track, but two tracks that have been so on the money this season. I think we found a partnership that worked. I think we've got two opposites. We've got Jukovic, who's very good at holding the ball up, and a player like a young Shea Adams, who's fearless and just wants to run at players, and both of them terrific in front of goal. So I think it's been a fantastic partnership, first in many, many seasons that we've, like I said, that we've had not just one good striker but two. So it's really done us good.
Let's talk about the proposed the points deduction of the side. There's reports that it could be 12 points reduction for Birmingham. It could happen this season or next season. If it is this season, then I'm pretty sure the City will be 1 point above the relegation zone. Would you prefer as a fan to have it this season, or would you rather have it next year?
It's going to be a bit controversial, but I would prefer to have it this year because I actually do back us to, if we do get the points deduction, to stay up anyway. I think we've got the quality and I think we've got the manager that will keep us up. And we've been in a relegation fight before, so we've got experience and we've got players that can win this game. So I would rather it this year just because I want to start, or I'm sure many other fans want to start on a clean slate next year without all the controversy. And I think if we do have it next year, I think we're already behind and if we have it this year and we stay up, then it's fine, which I imagine we will do so. While as next year, 12 points is a lot of ground to cover. And if you think about the effect, not just physically, but mentally that will have on us, I think it would be too much.
You talk about, obviously, Birmingham and avoiding relegation. They have a great history of that. We can obviously flashback the Paul Gaddis goal not too long ago. But obviously, a Carling Cup in 2011. As a Birmingham fan, what's been your highlight over the last decade or so?
Obviously, the 2011 League Cup was unbelievable. But because we went down that year, it was kind of bittersweet. I would probably say, however, that the season after, we were in Europe and we became the first English team to win away in Belgium against a side called Club Bruges. We took 8,000 fans, and I think watching, I think it was Chris Wood who actually scored the last minute goal to win it for us. I think that was just unbelievable. I think it to bring 8,000 fans anywhere, I think, is amazing. And I think I just highlighted the commitment and the passion that we have for the club. So I'll probably say, become the first side to ever win in Belgium.
It's been a while since you've been in the Premier League. Do you see Birmingham getting promoted back to the Premier League in the next few years?
I would like to think so, but it's quite hard being a Birmingham fan. You never know what you're going to get. So, I mean, I can't see it in the next couple of seasons. I think we're in a rebuilding process because of the financial stuff, the ownership stuff, and obviously not the best results in the Championship. But, you know, we've got the fan base. We're in the second biggest city of England. I can't see us being out of it for too long. I think without, we've got that much support, and we've got a coach that's willing to, a manager that's willing to go far with us. So if we do hang on, I think Gary Monk is the key for that. So if we do hold on to him, I can see us in the next three or four seasons, yeah.
And yeah, the final question I was just going to ask you about Gary Monk. he arrived at Birmingham after, well, I guess failing at Middlesbrough and departing Leeds in a weird situation there. But what has he been able to achieve at Birmingham? And do you think that he has the potential to manage back in the Premier League?
Yeah, absolutely. I think his man management has been the biggest asset. I think he's been able to build a relationship with the fans, and I think he's just made us competitive in every game we play. He knows what it takes to play for the shirt. He's found a system that works. Might not be the prettiest, but it's very effective. And, you know, for the low budget that we've had, he's brought in really, really smart and good players. I think as a manager, I think he's absolutely brilliant. I think he's got youth on his side, and I think he's got experience managing the top flight. So I wouldn't see why not go back to Premier League. I mean, hopefully it's with us, but if it's not with us, I could see him any lower or middle-lower side in the next couple of seasons. I think he's that good and got that much potential. I think he's going to have a really bright future in management.
Well, thank you for joining us, Lewis. We appreciate having you on the show, and hopefully...
Thanks so much for having me.
...Birmingham can continue with their good form. So thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. All the best.
Thank you to Lewis, and good luck to Birmingham, because they do play West Brom, Leeds United and Sheffield United in the next three games.
Yeah, you talk about the 12-point deduction, and I think he was right. You would want it to have it this year, because whilst they do have some tough games coming up, I think they would just survive out of that bottom three. And you never know, especially with the unpredictability of the league, starting on minus 12 next season would be a tough battle and a very big hill to succumb.
And it'll be hard to bring in players if you're starting on negative 12 points to start the season. Let's move on now to the rest of the Championship. And the game on the weekend, it was the game of the round, arguably could have been the biggest game of the season, with Sheffield United beating Leeds United at Allen Road 1-0. Chris Basham played as a midfielder instead of playing as a defender, as he usually does, and scored the winner for Sheffield United.
Yeah, fantastic for the Blades, obviously. I think that obviously Leeds had plenty of chances. Tyler Roberts, namely, missed a few, I think what you'd call them, sitters, even hitting the bar. But, fantastic defensive strengths from the Blades and Chris Wilder's side. You talk about Basham, but Cranny, Egan, O'Connell, all through midfield and defence. I thought that they were fantastic. And you do talk about, obviously, this could be the game that decides the top two. But Bielsa, I think, came out after the game and said it wasn't as crucial as everyone's saying. There's still 24 points left in the season. But he said he couldn't be unsatisfied. They were a dominant side, obviously, Leeds, and I think they'll be very disappointed and as they did create a lot of chances against a very good side. But he said that, yeah, he was just not too worried about the outcome, and his side's got time, and he's still backing them for that top two finish. But I think that they've just struggled to find a weak link in that Blade side. When obviously they did create a lot of possession, but I think this Blade side is just getting better and better as the season's getting closer to the end. We talk about players like Dow stepping up when Sharp and McGoldrick were absent, and now the defence is showing the strong side.
Yeah, I saw the game, and I didn't think Leeds had any real clear chances. There was that Tyler Roberts's effort that hit the post, but it wasn't a clear chance. Jack Harrison had one as well. They had a lot of possession, but their ball movement was slow, and their final third play towards Patrick Bamford was ordinary. The passes towards him were ordinary. Playing Pablo Hernandez on the right wing when they probably should have played him more centrally to be more of that creator. Playing out on the right wing, he didn't really have a lot of possession. Even their defence, Liam Cooper, their captain, led to the issue and led to that goal conceded. Pontus Janssen injured his knee in the game and had to play as a striker for the last 20 minutes before Kiko Kacilia got sent off, and then he had to become the goalkeeper.
Yeah, it was obviously playing three different positions. Janssen also had that chance as well towards the end, but he's also been ruled out for the next 3 weeks, which is a big blow for Leeds with that knee injury. But yeah, I think when you obviously talk about the chances given, I think Leeds didn't get a single shot on target from 17 attempts. It just shows that whilst they did have a lot of possession, they have wasted it with. But I think that's also when you look at how the Blades just set up in preventing Leeds' attacking run.
I think this could be the result that comes back to bite Leeds because they've fallen down to third place, and Norwich and Sheffield are the top two now. So in terms of automatic promotion, I'm starting to doubt whether Leeds can do it, and I'm starting to think if they're going to get promoted, it'll be through the playoffs.
Well, I don't have confidence in Leeds getting results week in, week out. People will talk about this game as the one that changed the course of their promotion chances, but for me, it's the loss of the likes of QPR earlier in the season. They're the games that they have to win. They can't lose those games. I'm pretty sure they lost to Millwall as well. They're not games you can lose if you want to get promotion, and that's the problem for Leeds. The run-in for both sides, so Sheffield United play Bristol City, Preston. They're the two big games, and Birmingham as well. Millwall, Nottingham Forest, Hull, Ipswich and Stoke. Leeds play Millwall, Birmingham, Preston, Sheffield Wednesday, Wigan, Brentford, Aston Villa and Ipswich.
Yeah, see, I think Norwich have just probably just stepped their way outside from those two sides. You look at Blades, obviously seven consecutive clean sheets. They have that, you know, don't concede, can't lose mentality. I think Luke Edwards from Telegraph said it best. They're built on a defence that repels pressure like an airbag. So, yeah, I think that's just the way the football they're playing at the moment. Chris Wilder's got them playing it perfectly under his game plan.
He doesn't get a lot
plan.
Of credit for his system.
He has lately, but you do talk about this whole run. It's only just ticked over with the Leeds victory.
Marcelo Bielsa said that he's learnt the most from Chris Wilder compared to any other manager in the championship this year. So Chris Wilder's playing his 3-4-1-2 formation where his two outside centre-backs, they push forward as well onto the wing, which means that the two wing-backs push as wingers. So they're playing one at the back while everyone else is pushing forward.
Yeah, some of the best counter-attacking football they've got at the moment. And like you said, you're still fantastic defensively while you have those defenders push up the ground. So, yeah, the Blades looking and probably favoured to go into that top two with Norwich. Now, there's obviously a big drop-off between those three and West Brom. So you think it's out of those four, obviously, at the moment. And, yeah, Blades leapfrogging Leeds into second certainly has them in prime position.
Let's move on to the Championship playoff race. And Aston Villa have moved into the top six following their 3-0 victory over Middlesbrough. Preston North are now 1 point behind Aston Villa in seventh position. And then Middlesbrough as well, three defeats in a row. They're struggling, and with Tony Pulis coming under heat for his style of play, they could be one of those sides that come out of the top six.
Yeah, I think that you look at the six, that especially that fifth and sixth spot, have been flirted with a lot lately. Yeah, and you talk about Villa, especially under Jack Grealish's return. I think it's four games, four wins, yeah. and 11 goals, one conceded. So yeah, they're flying at the moment. I think that with the form they're in, it's kind of hard to distract yourself from. But yeah, I think that for the remaining sides, Middlesbrough obviously conceding goals by a bunch as well, which is, I think, the major concerning point when you concede three and you are the best defensive side. It's obviously going to be, you know, a lot of question marks and a lot, not necessarily panicking, but it's coming to that part of the season where you are hoping you are playing your best football, and they've certainly dropped off at the moment. I think Derby, another one that just slowed down a bit lately. They've got game in hand, but their man Bristol City have kind of just dropped off from their form on Bristol City's draw to Ipswich, is probably the killer. Lloyd Kelly's own goal when he kicked it straight into his own net after actually almost did it in two plays in a row. But I still back Bristol City. I think they've just got the right team that can turn this around. I think that at the back with Webster and Callis, they're two very strong half backs, and when you've got Vyman up front, they've just got this great balance under Johnson, and I think they're my sixth side at the moment that's going to jump up. I think that we'll see Villa just stay up and potentially Borough at this point in time falling out of that top six.
Yeah, for Borough, only 40 goals scored this season in 37 games, which is the third fewest in the league. Tim, that's not what you want. Tony Pulis as well, his style of play. Do you think he's underachieved at Middlesbrough? They've got a lot of good players. Do you think he's underachieved?
If they don't seal promotion, he has, yes.
But did they have at the start of the season, did they have a squad good enough for automatic promotion?
I think so. I think they would have been up there. But now, soon they'll be having more games played than goals.
Let's move on. Actually, yeah, just Preston North End as well. I think they're the one that could get that final spot in the top six. But we'll move on to League One now, and we'll talk about the relegation battle. Well, first off, we'll talk about the promotion battle. Luton drew on the weekend, Barnsley drew as well, and Sunderland won, which means they're only 2 points behind Barnsley with a game in hand.
Game in hand.
But Luton still look on course to get promotion. And also good news in the past week that their new stadium has been agreed, so that new stadium will be built shortly.
Yeah, fantastic, especially if they can be playing championship games for their club at their new ground. The big one was obviously Coventry leapfrog Peterborough into seventh spot. So they're just 1 point from Doncaster at the moment. But I think the top five settled with, you know, 10-point gap between Charlton and Doncaster. And it's just a matter of where each team finishes in that top five. Blackpool's goal difference of minus one is probably going to hurt them the most in their push to try and get in to that top seven. But, you look at also, Coventry has a goal difference of just one, so needing to score a few more and concede less, those two. But I think that at the moment, the top six that stands with Doncaster, Charlton, I think those they'll wrap out the top six.
Yeah, I think Coventry's been really, they've performed incredibly well with a lot of off-field issues still at the club. They might not even have a stadium next season to play at. There's issues with the Ryko Arena, but they're seventh on the table, only 1 point behind Doncaster. If you look at the form table as well, I think they're in the top, well, five wins in their last eight games. They're in the top three there. Let's talk about the relegation battle. 13 sides separated by 9 points.
Very close.
You'd say it's slightly close, Tim.
Very.
I think that between a side that's in relegation, I think Bristol Rovers are quite close. It's tight in there, but 42 to 45 points. A win could put you in, win could put you out, and win could move you 10 spots at the moment. I think it's the most exciting battle in all of English football at the moment, is when you've got half a league that can potentially be relegated at some point coming into this last final draw of the season. It's very exciting. And probably the highlights from the weekend being obviously Wimbledon's 1-0 win over Southend, thanks to that Joe Piggott winner. Oxford United also picked up vital 3 points versus Bradford with a 90th minute Jamie McKay winner. Gillingham held Luton to a 2-2 draw, which I think was great for them. Tom Eves scoring his 18th goal as well. And obviously with Wimbledon, potential fairy tale story. We thought that they were doomed, gloomed and set for League Two, but they face Gillingham, Scunthorpe, Accrington Stanley, Oxford, and Bristol Rovers in their next few. That's before a fixture against Luton, which is obviously going to be, I think it's the only tough game they've really got. The last three after that face more relegation battlers. So I think if they can just stab at a few points, not worry about winning, but I think draws at the moment for a side like this are really vital. When you just keep picking up points each week, that's really going to be a real positive for them, and just not looking to drop easy points to some of these other relegation battlers.
Well, they gained a boost from that FA Cup run that they had. They've won four of their six games since their defeat to Millwall in the FA Cup. But they're a side that doesn't score a lot, but what they've been able to do is hold their opponents. And if they can continue to hold their opponents scoreless, then they're going to... It doesn't matter if they score one or two goals, because they're not going to score the three or four that you expect in these lower leagues. So that's the one problem that they do have. But if they can keep their other teams, their opponents, to one goal max, they have every opportunity to avoid relegation. But it is a fairy tale story if they can, because we thought that the whole doom and gloom.
Exactly right. We thought that this was one of the earliest sides, along with maybe a Huddersfield and Notts County, that we could pencil in for relegation. It's always, you know, unfortunate, maybe in Ipswich as well, but they've certainly proved doubters wrong. And it's coming, it's coming to the right part of the season with that FA Cup run and the form they're in. And they have played the hard teams. That is, I think, a main factor to look at, is they have played a lot of the higher teams up. And with the last dozen or so games to go, there's certainly a great chance with a lot of teams around them that they're going to play.
Yeah. Let's move on to League 2. And there was a big game this morning on BN Sport. Great game as well. Mansfield and Lincoln City, a 1-1 draw. Mansfield dominated this game and probably should have got all 3 points if it were not for a goalkeeping error by their goalkeeper, who tackled one of the Lincoln City players, and which led to a penalty, which was scored.
Yeah, Logan took out Anderson. It was obviously reckless, you'd say, ran out. Anderson, I think, was vital for him to get that early touch onto the ball. If he misses that ball, then I think it's just a clear goal kick. But, Logan just took him out straight after his touch. Easy penalty. Kinde stepped up. And
it was a brilliant penalty.
Calmly did it. I think he just waited for the goalkeeper to move first, which was very smart. But, yeah, you talk about Mansfield. I think Lincoln will also be disappointed, especially the way that Mansfield went about scoring. Corner coming in, and I think the header comes probably a foot away from the goalkeeper. So disappointing, but set pieces were really where I thought that both teams were looking very dangerous. I thought that both sides, I thought, attacked very well, and Mansfield did look like they probably were the team to score, but it was a very unpredictable ending, I thought, with what was going to happen, because both teams attacked very well and both defences at the same time were stood up. So a great near top of the table clash. Obviously Mansfield take that and they'll go over MK Dons at the moment. But it's just tight for that third spot at the moment. We do talk about Bury when they return to League 2. Now fighting and close with Lincoln, that's after this morning's game, does shuffle a bit around. But 1 point just separating 6th and 9th as well between Forest Green, Exeter, Colchester and Carlisle. So I think that between those clubs, Forest Green obviously doing fantastically well, in more of an underdog story. But a lot of teams making this late push, like Mansfield are.
And as the table stands, Lincoln City on top of the table on 76 points. Bury on 70 points in second, but they do have a game in hand. Mansfield on 66 points after 38 games, which is equal with MK Dons, who are on 66 points with 38 games. And if you look at the other end of the table, Macclesfield Town won on the weekend over Uville, which means Uville are now only 3 points above Macclesfield in the safety zone, with Notts County also on 33 points, level with Macclesfield, 3 points behind Yeovil. Since Sol Campbell has taken over at Macclesfield, they've got 23 points in 18 games under his leadership at the club, and Yeovil in that same period have only had 14 points, accumulated 14 points in 18 games.
Yeah, it's a three-man race in those last two spots at the bottom of the table. So I think with Macclesfield's form at the moment, and obviously knocking off Uville, it's fantastic timing. I think Notts, level on points, are probably not looking their best and potentially staying down. So it'll be interesting to see which of the two out of those three will drop out to the non-league.
Let's go to our quiz now. So what's everyone's buzzers for the quiz?
I'll go with Notts.
I'll go with Leeds.
All right. Question one. Who is bottom of the form table in the championship?
Notts. I will say Bolton.
Wrong.
Leeds. I will say Ipswich.
Wrong. Blackburn. 4 points in their last 8 games. Question two. Which division has had the highest percentage of draws? A, Prem. B, Championship. C, League 1. D, League 2.
Leeds, League 1.
Wrong.
Notts. Premier League.
Wrong. Championship, 30%. Question 3, true or false? Sadio Mane is Liverpool's all-time leading scorer in away games in the Champions League.
Notts, true.
Correct. Question four. Who did Joe Garner play for prior to Wigan? A, Ipswich, B, Watford, C, Blackburn, D, Coventry.
Not Blackburn.
Wrong.
Leeds, Coventry?
Wrong. Ipswich. Question five. This club was formed in 1904 and play in League Two. They have reached the final of the Football League trophy six times, more than any other team, and won it on two occasions in 1997 and 2011. Their home kit is blue, and their second part of their name is United. We spoke about them last week as well.
Knots. It's Carlisle United.
Correct. So Mitch is now
2-0 win. Winning. And the lead on the now table. On
top, he's overtaken both Tim and Braden. And that is it for the English Football Show this week. We might do a live video with our Joey Barden nominees for the week. So that is it for the English Football Show this week. We'll catch you again same time next Tuesday at 11 a.m. So we'll see you again next week.